International Blues Challenge in Memphis in 2012. For more information, go to the KGNU calendar page and click on the event tab for today's date.
This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, August 18th. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, the Delta variant is fueling a rise in cases nationwide, including along the highly vaccinated Front Range. Governor Jared Polis formally rescinds a 19th century order to kill Native Americans. We'll look at how urban bees are doing in Denver. And finally, our regular Wednesday feature, Naturally, with herbalist Brigitte Mars. A BBC update and commentary from Jim Hightower are at the bottom of the hour. And then it's A Public Affair with Rosanna Longo-Better. Then at 9:30, the Morning Sound Alternative comes your way to bring you a mix of eclectic music until noon. That's all still ahead this morning after these news headlines with Alexis Kenyon.
Schools across much of the Front Range will have mask mandates in place when they reopen for the new school year. The mandates include Adams, Douglas, and Arapahoe counties, whose Tri-County Board of Health voted 4-4 in support of a mask mandate yesterday. The Boulder Valley School District, which reopens today, has had a mask mandate in place since last week. As was the case last year, BVSD will continue to regularly test a pool of students whose parents have opted in to the random testing program. Children in pre-K and kindergarten will have to quarantine if a case is detected in their group, but guidance for older groups depends on symptoms. The Boulder County Health Department approved the mandate for everyone 2 years and older in school buildings and child care facilities. The City of Boulder announced in a press release that, in partnership with the state's COVID-19 vaccination clinic program, they will continue to offer free vaccine clinics through September 19th. They're hosting the clinics from noon to 5 p.m. at the main branch of Boulder County Public Library. In the press release, they said, especially as kids are headed back to school, families and students ages 12 to 19 should get vaccinated. Rocky Mountain National Park is also requiring masks for vaccinated visitors. The mask mandate includes all indoor spaces as well as the park's most popular outdoor trails. A new release from the National Park Service says that the latest science and guidance from the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention have informed the mandate and will be in effect until further notice. In May, the National Park had lifted its mask mandate as vaccination rates rose, but the current surge in COVID-19 cases has prompted the Park Service to reimpose the mandate. The U.S. Forest Service has released its draft management plan for the Grand Mesa, Uncompahgre, and Gunnison, or GMUG, National Forests. Lily Bulkey reports.
The plan includes a significant increase in the amount of land that would be available for logging, and groups that advocate for public lands are raising concerns that it recommends only 34,000 acres of new wilderness across the forest. Forest plans are revised roughly every 15 years, and Allison Elliott, a former board member at the Western Slope Conservation Center, says there's no time to waste.
That's just a small fraction of what could be set aside and designated as wilderness. So to be able to protect wilderness and wildlife and watersheds, this is the moment.
The GMUG National Forests are home to species on the endangered species list, from the Gunnison sage grouse to the Canada lynx. And Elliott adds this land also is home to diverse ecosystems and wildlife. Public comments about the draft plan can be submitted until November 11th. I'm Lily Bulkey reporting.
The Denver Department of Housing Stability has released a draft of the city's 5-year plan to address homelessness in the metro area. According to the Denver Post, the new report finds that Denver's annual per capita spending on the unhoused is at least twice as high as the cost of rent for a one-bedroom apartment. researchers at CU Denver have estimated that Denver spends between $42,000 and $104,000 each year per person experiencing homelessness. Governor Jared Polis on Tuesday rescinded two proclamations that led to the mutilation and mass murder of more than 200 Cheyenne and Arapaho people in the Eastern Plains, including women, children, and the elderly, by military troops in 1864. Representatives and leaders of the tribes who were massacred attended the ceremony outside Colorado State Capitol in Denver. We have more on this story later in the program. For the weather today, across the Front Range, it will be sunny and warm for most of the day with a high of 96. In the afternoon, you can expect thunderstorms starting around 4 p.m. Thursday, it will cool off somewhat with a high of 84, partly cloudy skies, and more expected thunderstorms. Over the plains, it will stay hot and dry. According to the Air Quality Index, today's air quality is moderate. Outside our Boulder studio, it is 67 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Alexis Kenyon.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. The Delta variant of the virus that causes COVID-19 is fueling a rise in cases on the national and local levels. As the school year starts, many districts are instituting mask mandates and public health officials are adjusting their guidance. Joining me live via Zoom is Boulder County Public Health Medical Officer Dr. Chris Urbina. Good morning, Dr. Urbina, and thanks for coming on the program.
Thank you, Shannon. Always good to see you guys and provide out information for our community.
First, can you give listeners an idea of where the situation stands now with coronavirus cases in Boulder County and across the Front Range?
Great question. I think that's people want to know that because we have a very high rate of vaccination in our community. We're starting to see a rise in all age groups starting probably late July and early August. So we're very concerned, primarily because the Delta variant, as you know, is more 2 to 3 times more contagious and spread very rapidly, particularly among the unvaccinated population. So we're starting to see that trend now. And hence, as your lead in said, we're now requiring indoor masks mandates for children K through 12, 2+ and older, and K through 12 and early childhood centers in Boulder County.
On Friday evening, Boulder County Public Health sent out a press release indicating that all individuals over 2 years of age should wear masks in indoor settings, regardless of vaccination status. This is beyond just inside of schools. However, it's still very common to, say, go to the grocery store and see people without masks. What are county health officials doing to get the word out about this change in guidelines? Yeah.
Well, hopefully speaking to people like you who can help us get that word out. We do a lot of community outreach. In fact, this afternoon, I'm working with Angela and our community ambassadors to talk to a community about the importance of wearing masks indoors, particularly for those folks unvaccinated. Again, the Delta variant is spread very rapidly among all participants. And we're starting to see, and this is our challenge, is some of those breakthrough cases in people that were previously vaccinated. Hence, the reason for everyone to be masked indoors, particularly as you get closer together, masks not only protect you, but also protect the people around you. So I think it's a cautionary importance. We are not requiring at this point mandating it, but we're strongly recommending it for all people indoors. We're requiring it in the school settings.
And I confess that Boulder County Public Health's press release on Friday made me check the infographics on case rates for the first time in several weeks. And I was surprised to see how sharply cases have grown in that interim. We're essentially back to the level of cases unseen since late April, and the transmission happened rather quickly. Are you seeing hospitalization rates similar to where they were in the spring, or are vaccinations protecting us from that?
Great question. I think when we look back last year about this time, our cases are far more advanced even though we have folks that are vaccinated. So we're thinking, why is this happening? And I think it's largely due to the Delta variant. And as you know, there's a 2 to 4 week delay in hospitalizations after the cases start to rise. So we're probably going to see those. We're starting to see the beginnings of increased hospitalizations in all age groups, particularly, again, unvaccinated folks. But we're starting to see an alarming number of cases of those breakthrough infections, although that's still rare, also being hospitalized. So that's part of our reason and strongly recommending everyone, whether or not you're vaccinated or not, to mask up indoors. And so we'll probably watch this trend and stay tuned, because you'll see the data on our website and in Colorado. And this is true also in Colorado, not just Boulder County, along the Front Range. We're probably going to see that delay in the next 2 to 3 weeks, an increase in hospitalization. So it's not too late to get vaccinated. And I think the important piece is that even if you've been vaccinated, if you have symptoms or you've been in contact with somebody, we still have pre-testing available at the Heart of Longmont. We also have the Stasio fields that are still free and available for you to get tested, because we want to know. And I think you want to know if you've been positive, and so you can isolate yourself away from others and hopefully protect folks, even if you've been vaccinated. But I still think it's important to emphasize vaccinations protect you from severe illness, hospitalizations, and death. Very important. That's still a priority for everyone, to make sure they can get vaccinated. And as we eliminate the hosts or the potential for people getting infected, we can decrease the number of cases and decrease the virus from continuing to mutate. You know, we didn't know about this Delta variant until early this summer, actually in the springtime, and there are other variants looming. So we want to get everybody vaccinated, and we want to get everybody protected so that we can reduce the amount of change of the virus and mutations.
But of course, there is a large group of people who cannot get vaccinated, and those are the people who are under the age of 12. And school starts today in Boulder County. What protocols are in place to monitor cases and to prevent outbreaks at the school level, particularly among those who are under 12 years of age?
Thank you, Shannon. That's a great question. It gives me an opportunity to tell you what a great partner both Boulder Valley School District and St. Vrain School Districts have been with us. We work very closely with them, not only from Boulder County Public Health, but also Broomfield Public Health, and working with our allies and trying to reduce the spread. Of course, number one is vaccinations for those people that are eligible. Number two is implementing indoor mask requirements. Broomfield took a little different tack, 2 through 11, as you know, you've seen that press release. Of children who are unvaccinated. Boulder took a different tack in terms of masking everybody, regardless of vaccination status, at all age groups, including staff and teachers. Both are part of that layers of protection. So vaccinations, masking, indoor ventilation, washing your hands, respiratory etiquette. If you're sick, staying out of school. And then we work very closely with our partners in the schools to identify those kids who may be sick. And if those exposed, then we can focus on those folks that potentially had high risk exposure, and we can keep those kids out of school. Remember, our goal with the schools is to keep kids in school. That's they thrive. They have fun. They have lots of they need to learn. So by putting these mitigation strategies in place and working with our school partners, we can reduce the amount of infection and, of course, reduce the number of quarantine and keeping our kids in school much longer. I think it makes sense. It's not a torture. Kids can wear masks. They feel very comfortable, particularly the kids that have been used to it all of last year. But also, there are medical exemptions. Clearly, if you have a developmental problem, anxiety, or a medical condition like asthma, you know, their schools have, we have medical exemptions in place to actually allow you to continue to go to school without a mask.
Dr. Chris Urbina, Medical Officer with Boulder County Public Health, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, and I appreciate the opportunity, Shannon. Have a great day.
You too. We'll be right back after this quick break. Governor Jared Polis yesterday rescinded an 1864 proclamation that formed part of an official framework used to displace, dispossess, and kill Native Americans across Colorado. KGNU's Elena Claver went to the ceremony on the steps of the state capitol yesterday and shares this interview.
A group of Native people in an organization called People of the Sacred Land worked for months to compel the state of Colorado to rescind an 1864 proclamation by then-Governor John Evans that made it legal for Colorado residents to murder Indian people and loot their communities and their personal property. The original proclamation stood until August 17, 2021, when Governor Polis signed an executive order officially rescinding the 1864 proclamation. A ceremony was held yesterday on the steps of the state capitol with Native representatives from many nations, as well as elected representatives, Governor Polis, and many Native people and allies. This effort was the result of relentless and principled organizing, agitation, and work over decades and over generations. Rick Williams, one of the lead historians and activists with People of the Sacred Land, spoke with KGNU.
This is the end of the Colorado Wars, finally. And it's the beginning of us working towards bringing our people back to their homeland. We've been exiled long enough. It's time for some things to change. We want to expose the dishonorable dealings that happened with the Treaty of 1861. And we want to find some way to heal. This is the beginning. This is only the beginning. We've got to do a lot more.
And for those who aren't here, could you explain what this was today? What was this proclamation and the research that you yourself did to try and bring this to light?
I spent 2.5 years researching this, the last year and a half trying to get the governor to even listen to us. And finally, after I confronted him directly, he decided to do something about this. This is a major, major issue because only Indian people were being impacted by this. You wonder about civil rights violations. You wonder about all this stuff. And it's going on today. You know, this was a law till just now.
And what do you think will be some of the consequences of this for the future as far as honoring treaties which have been abrogated or honoring land rights which have been abridged?
Well, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to, even if we have to privately fund it, we're going to do a truth and reconciliation in Colorado because of all the stuff that happened, because of all the lies, because of all the deceit, and because it's been kept a secret from the Colorado people. They don't know about what happened here. They don't know why. You only have to ask one question. Why are there no Indian reservations in the Front Range or on the eastern plains of Colorado? And the answer is genocide.
That was Rick Williams, Lakota Cheyenne elder, speaking with KGNU volunteer Elena Claver. Up next, we will look at the bees in Denver. It may seem counterintuitive to hear that bees living in urban areas are often better off than their suburban counterparts, but that does indeed seem to be the case in Denver. Franny Halperin of H2O Radio sends this report.
If you stroll the streets of downtown Denver in the spring and summer, you're bound to see bees buzzing around the city's plentiful parks and planting beds. What you might be surprised to learn is that a growing number of those pollinators don't live close to the ground. Far from it.
We're going to the 23rd floor, and then we're going to be heading up the stairwell to the 24th floor with a roof access.
I'm on an elevator at 1700 Broadway, an iconic Denver high-rise designed by the world-famous architect I.M. Pei. With me is Gina Garacio of Beacon Capital Partners, which owns the building. She's taking me to meet one of their loftier tenants. Wow, what a view.
Yeah, right? And it's a beautiful Denver day, so let's see what our bees are doing.
Stepping onto the roof affords spectacular views, west to the Rocky Mountains and east to the Great Plains, and the last place you'd expect to find beehives.
They look pretty happy.
How can you tell?
Look how active they are. Can't you see their smiles?
The three boxes, which look like wooden filing cabinets, are owned by Best Bees, a company that installs and manages hives for residential and commercial customers. Clients like Beacon are putting hives on their properties, whether office buildings, hotels, or corporate campuses, to support sustainability goals and meet demands from investors around environmental stewardship. Hosting pollinators might be good for a company's bottom line, but according to research, it's also good for bees, They're thriving in cities more than in rural or suburban areas.
So counterintuitive. And really, we're now able to compare habitats from skyscraper rooftops to suburban gardens and decks, all the way out to rural farms and pastures and forests.
That's Noah Wilson Rich, one of the founders of Best Bees. Since launching the company in 2010 and installing hives in 14 cities coast to coast, he's started to see a trend.
This one beehive made 128 pounds of honey in 1 year, and that is like way high. We couldn't help but notice that the beehives in urban areas were making way more honey than the beehives in the countryside.
And living longer. Part of the reason, he says, is plant diversity. Like us, bees are healthier on a varied diet, and urban areas tend to have more diverse landscapes than suburbs, where there are lots of lawns, which bees don't like. And in rural areas, there are often monocultures, where only one crop is being grown, and pesticides can be in use. Best Bees wants to improve pollinator health in all these locations, and so their hives double as research tools, using data that happens to be sweet and edible.
So we collect samples of honey. We call this project Honey DNA. We look at the plant DNA genome within samples of honey to measure how many different plants are in there. And so we found 8 times more plant diversity in urban areas compared to their nearby suburbs. Specifically in Boston, 411 different plants in one little taste, 1 teaspoon of honey, 411 flavors, compared to 52 different plants in Duxbury, which is south of Boston.
Honey is a great forensic tool because it never goes bad. A CSI beehive, where you can piece together a crime scene. In this case, solving the mystery of where the bees grabbed their pollen and nectar.
And it's called genomics. It's just like 23andMe or Ancestry DNA. And so now it's just applied to plants for the first time.
Starting this September, the data they're collecting will be available to the public. Along with their nonprofit Urban Beekeeping Laboratory, Best Bees will launch their Honey DNA website, where clicking on a map location will show the top 5 plants bees are visiting in an area, so gardeners can add them to their yards to support pollinators. The project is a partnership with NASA and Google Earth, which overlaid hive data on satellite maps to locate so-called blue zones, places where bees are thriving, like near that downtown Denver high-rise. Noah is not surprised bees like skyscrapers. Working with MIT, they recently sent bees into space.
We wanted to understand how bees can be the most resilient, and also if it would be possible to have bees travel and up into space and then rear a whole hive from them.
The bees flew on the same Blue Origin rocket that Jeff Bezos took a year later and happily returned to MIT, even if his trip got a lot more buzz. For H2O Radio, I'm Franny Halperin.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars to talk about a plant that you may see growing by the side of the road, tall and looks kind of rust-colored. What is that, you might ask? Well, it's yellow dock, otherwise known as Rumex crispus. Crispus means curly. Also, this plant, yellow dock, is known as curly dock. And narrow dock and sour dock. So yellow dock is a member of the Polygonaceae family, which is also the buckwheat family. So that means it's also a relative of rhubarb and Japanese knotweed and the wonderful Chinese tonic herb hoshuwu. So in the springtime, yellow dock has edible leaves. In the springtime, I've used yellow dock to make salad and quiche and stir fry. I've even dehydrated some of it to make chips. And yellow dock also has edible seeds. So those really rusty components that you see growing tall, often where there's a prairie dogs living, those seeds could be ground up in a blender, and those seeds are going to give you protein and amino acids like lysine. That's pretty amazing. So yellow dock seeds are an edible seed, technically not a grain because they're not in the grass family. And yellow dock was widely used by native peoples. Yellow dock has another medicinal compound, and that is found in the root. So the reason it's called yellow dock is because the inside of the root is yellow because of the presence of an alkaloid called berberine. Now, berberine is also found in things like golden seal, but golden seal's endangered in the wild. So we really should be using yellow dock instead. So yellow dock has a long history of medicinal use. It was included in the United States Pharmacopoeia until 1905. How come? To clear toxin, move stagnations, promote bile flow, reduce inflammation, and to inhibit the growth of E. coli and staph. So it's really a great medicinal tea. It adds a component to help in the digestion of fats. And it's really one of my favorite herbs for treatment of skin conditions like acne and eczema. But it's the root that's going to be used mostly as a medicinal property plant. So you've got edible leaves, you've got edible seeds, and you've got medicinal roots. So next time you think about calling yellow dock a weed, remember that Emerson said, a weed is an herb whose virtue has not yet been recognized. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
And that's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Elena Claver, Brigitte Mars, Franny Halperin, and Alexis Kenyon for their contributions to today's show. A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, call us at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25 during the Morning Magazine.